Good morning. This is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph from Monday, February 2nd, 2026. From the front page, rights are being trampled on. 120 return to BCPA lawn to protest Fed's ICE crackdown. By D. Jack Elkery. Bloomington. Instead of staying inside, watching TV or playing video games, 13-year-old Athena Escalera spent her Saturday afternoon leading protest chants with her mother and about 120 others. They gathered on the lawn of the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts for the second time in 2 days to voice their displeasure with federal immigration crackdowns across the country, something Athena said was very personal for her. "I know a lot of people that are at risk of being deported," she said. "Protesting with like-minded people shows that there's other people that believe in the stuff I believe in. And it's not just Trump this, Trump that, rule the world, take over Greenland," Athena said. Her mother, Adriana, agreed. "There's other people who stand here in solidarity with us," she said. "Nobody's alone here right now." Unlike many of those that have popped up over the last 12 months since President Donald Trump was inaugurated for a second term, the protest held Saturday afternoon was not sponsored by any specific group, said Olkina Moss, the event's organizer. "This is a community-led event, a community-organized event. This is not affiliated with any particular organization. This is just Bloomington Normal showing up to voice their dissent," she said. Still, the crowd was diverse, including young people like Athena and older adults like Dan Lichty. "I want to show some solidarity with the people in Minneapolis and, you know, emphasize that we don't want to see that coming our way," Lichty said. Many people held signs honoring people who have been killed during the crackdown, like Renee Good and Alex Preddy, who were killed by federal agents. Jasmine Gorsuch, though, held a sign honoring 5-year-old Liam Conejo Ramos, who was detained alongside his father in Minneapolis. "Why are we doing this? If it was supposed to be going after hardened criminals, what are we doing to a 5-year-old little boy? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this to any of these people? The disabled people? People just trying to get to their doctor's appointments," Gorsuch said. A federal judge has since ordered Liam and his father, Adrian Alexander Conejo Arias, to be released, and they arrived back in Minneapolis last night. "People's rights are being trampled on," said Robin Jones. "What is going on in this country is not acceptable." She said the federal government is normalizing attacking and killing its citizens, and that's what's crazy. "This could happen all over the country if people don't come together and push back," she said. "Congressional Republicans are sitting on their hands and not pushing back on some of the things that are being trampled on out here," Jones said. "They know that's not right. If this happened under Obama, my God, could you imagine? Never would have been allowed." Her husband Jarvis, an Army veteran, said, "I just think they should take money out of politics. Take money out of it." However, he said he sees change on the horizon. "This country is too resilient to go down, you know, as cheap as it's going right now," he said. Also from the front page, Cooksville, eatery close to total loss after fire. By D. Jack Elkery. Cooksville. A Saturday morning fire has rendered the Long Branch again, a popular bar and eatery in Cooksville, close to a total loss. According to a Facebook post from the Cooksville Fire Department, first responders were called Saturday morning for reports of a fire at the restaurant, located at 102 Garfield Avenue. Upon arrival, crews were met with heavy smoke, and fire officials called for mutual aid from Octavia Fire Protection District and Ellsworth, Towanda, and Lexington Fire Departments. Leewar Ambulance Service also responded. No injuries were reported in connection to the fire Saturday. The building was heavily damaged by fire and smoke and is close to a total loss, according to the Cooksville Fire Department. Long Branch, again, has been a community staple for decades. First opened in 1962, Pat Graff owns the business, having started as a bartender in 2001, according to a 2023 interview with the Pantograph. Fish fries in the spring were a major draw for the restaurant, bringing customers from several of the small towns in the area. But in general, good food and good prices kept people coming back, staff and customers have said. "We can't tell you how much of a loss it is to us on the department and the community. The bar was the biggest staple of the community," Cooksville Fire said in the Facebook post. "I can't say thanks enough to all the departments that helped us in our moment of need. Keep Pat Graff, the owner, and all the employees in your prayers through this difficult time. We are all heartbroken." Cooksville Fire Department could not be reached Saturday afternoon for further comment. Also on the front page of the February 2nd edition of the Pantograph, student loans. Policy changes leave some forgiveness money taxable, by Sam Freeman, Medill, Illinois News Bureau, Springfield. For the first time in 5 years, certain forms of student loan forgiveness will be taxable following a change in the federal tax policy this year. This comes after a provision of the American Rescue Plan Act expired December 31st. That measure, signed into law in 2021 by former President Joe Biden, temporarily excluded student loan debt from federal income taxes. And those tax implications could extend to Illinois state taxes as well, unless lawmakers act. President Donald Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act, enacted last summer, did not make the student loan tax forgiveness provision permanent. As a result, student loans that are canceled or partially forgiven in 2026 and beyond will see taxes owed on those forgiven amounts, advocates said. These taxes could amount to as much as $10,000, depending on the borrower's income. This includes income-driven repayment plan-related forgiveness, some closed school discharges, where 100% of a student loan obligation is wiped out if a school closes, and private settlements. Meanwhile, some forms of loan forgiveness remain tax-free, such as public service loan forgiveness, teacher loan forgiveness, and death and disability discharge programs. According to a report from Protect Borrowers, a nonprofit organization dedicated to eliminating the burden of student debt, two-thirds of people who receive loan cancellation under income-driven repayment plans earn less than $50,000 a year and have less than $1,000 in savings. A tax bomb on people with that amount of assets and that amount of income, it could be really financially devastating, said Jennifer Zhang, a researcher for Project Borrowers. A group of congressional Democrats, including U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, sent a letter to Treasury Secretary and Acting IRS Commissioner Scott Bessent on November 9th, calling the tax reinstatement a financial disaster for working-class Americans. Illinois will also tax loan forgiveness. In addition to federal taxes, some borrowers will also face a similar tax hike at the state level. Illinois is one of 20 states whose tax codes automatically conform to the federal change. This means that unless Illinois legislators decouple the conforming provision before taxes are due next year, student loan forgiveness accounts will also be taxed by the state. "I would certainly be supportive of decoupling," Senator Mike Halpin, Democrat Rock Island, said, although it's currently not an issue that has reached the Illinois state legislature. Lawmakers passed a bill in their fall veto session to decouple the state and federal tax code as it pertain to certain corporate taxes to head off a budget shortfall for the upcoming year, but it did not address student borrowing. Other challenges facing student loan forgiveness are also expected to take effect this year. Student loan forgiveness under Biden's Saving on Valuable Education, or SAVE, plan has been blocked for more than a year after some Republican-led states mounted legal challenges, claiming the program is illegal. As a result, 7 million borrowers have been stuck in forbearance, which does not count toward loan forgiveness under income-driven repayment plans or the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Protection. The SAVE plan is an income-driven repayment plan for federal student loans created to lower monthly payments, limit interest from ballooning payments, and accelerate loan forgiveness. If a proposed settlement agreement between the U.S. Department of Education and the state of Missouri is approved, the SAVE plan will end entirely. That would require borrowers to switch to another plan, like an income-based repayment plan, to qualify for loan forgiveness. This change shouldn't result in any loss of loan forgiveness credit. Income-based repayment is currently the only student loan repayment plan that remains preserved by the One Big Beautiful Bill. Trump's bill removed the partial financial hardship requirement from the income-based repayment, which makes it easier for borrowers with higher incomes to enroll. Income-based repayment is a federal student loan plan that caps monthly payments at a percentage of the borrower's discretionary income. It is intended to benefit borrowers who have a high debt relative to their income. The SAVE lawsuit also suspended student loan forgiveness under the Income Contingent Repayment, or ICR, plan and Pay As You Earn, or PAY, plan. The Department of Education agreed to resume processing student loans that had reached their 25-year or 20-year eligibility threshold after a lawsuit challenge. Although loan forgiveness under ICR and PAY is expected to resume in February, these plans will be phased out under Trump's bill by July 2028. As with SAVE, borrowers enrolled in ICR and PAY will need to switch to an income-based repayment plan or a new repayment assistance plan, or RAP, that is supposed to launch later this year. RAP includes lower payments for some borrowers, an instant interest subsidy that will prevent loans from ballooning over time, and a 30-year repayment term before a borrower can qualify for student loan forgiveness. This repayment term is longer than current IDR options. They might never be able to buy a home. When students have that much of a continual financial strain, they don't build up their savings. They might not ever buy a home. They might not ever have kids, Zhang said. They might not ever have achieved these different kinds of financial milestones. RAP will also require higher monthly payments for the lowest income borrowers. Finally, borrowers with federal Parent PLUS loans, who are typically limited to the ICR plan, could also face changes to their repayment options. Individuals with questions about their loans should call our student loan helpline, 1-800-455-2456, which can direct struggling student borrowers to free resources about repayment options and information on avoiding default, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul said in a statement. Borrowers can also use the Federal Student Aid website's Loan Simulator to calculate monthly repayments, evaluate repayment plan eligibility, and choose the best repayment plan that best suits their needs. Turning to page 2, today's Flick Fact question. One of the all-time classic movies that will no doubt be repeated again today is Groundhog Day, starring Bill Murray and Andy McDowell, a movie thought to be shot in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, where Groundhog Day is annually celebrated. But truth be told, can you name the Illinois town where it actually was filmed? Number 1, Woodstock. Number 2, Quincy. Number 3, Lawrenceville. Number 4, Carbondale. Answer. It was in Woodstock, the McHenry County town of 26,000, about 50 miles northwest of Chicago. How time flies. 100 years ago, February 2, 1926, the Bloomington Association of Commerce will ask the City Council to provide a reserve parking space on the Courthouse Square for the motor bus lines. 75 years ago, February 2, 1951, when the temperature slid down to 16 degrees below zero in Bloomington Normal, it set a record that might go back 21 years. The mercury set a record at least back to 1942. Records are not available between 1933 and 1942. 50 years ago, February 2, 1976, January's 20.9 average mean temperature made it the coldest Twin City January since 1971 and the third coldest on record in the last 10 years. The mean temperature for January averaged 19.7 degrees in 1971 and 16.4 degrees in 1970. The lowest average for January in two decades was 16.1 degrees, recorded in 1963. 25 years ago, 2001, the Mitsubishi Auto Plant rolled out another car, but this one was different, marking two milestones since the company began producing cars in 1988. The first, which the automaker heralded with much fanfare, signified the fact that the silver 2001 Eclipse was the 2 millionth vehicle produced at the Normal plant. The second was less obvious because it symbolized a turnaround in fortunes in 1998, the plant's most successful year ever. This vehicle is really a symbol that, together, we have turned Mitsubishi Motor Manufacturing of America around. We are a company on the move, said the vice president and chief operating officer of MMMA. From page 10, 3, Lexington, Four Residents' Dogs Escape Structure Fire, by Kelsey Watznauer. Lexington. Four people and two dogs were able to safely evacuate their Lexington home this weekend when a fire started in the garage, fire officials said. About 2:09 a.m., Lexington firefighters were dispatched to Prairie Drive, where flames were visible from across town. Upon arrival, they found a three-stall garage engulfed in flames, according to a Facebook post from the department. Our first arriving engine immediately hit the fire with its deck gun, quickly knocking it down while hand lines were stretched and a water supply was secured from the nearby hydrant, the department said. Two adults and children evacuated the home, and no firefighters were injured in the response. Two dogs also safely left the home, although one escaped for a while outside before it was located. The contents of the garage were a total loss, according to the fire department, but crews did successfully keep the fire from breaching into the living areas of the house. Smoke and water damage did occur. The cause of the fire has not yet been determined and remains under investigation by the State Fire Marshal's Office. The Lexington Fire Department noted the home had working smoke detectors and advised residents to test theirs so they might be as fortunate with time to evacuate. Lexington Police provided support on scene, and Public Works brought salt as the fire crews responded in freezing temperatures. Multiple mutual aid agencies also responded, Towanda, Shenoah, Colfax, Gridley, and Hudson Fire Departments. Cooksville manned Lexington Station while fires were on scene, and Lexington Fire also thanked MetCom, which was cool, calm, and collected throughout. Turning to page B6, severe weather continues to wreak havoc across U.S. by Adrian Sains, Associated Press. A huge swath of the U.S. from the Gulf Coast into New England was mired in extra cold temperatures Sunday after a bomb cyclone brought heavy snow and hundreds of flight cancellations to North Carolina, flurries and falling iguanas in Florida, and more misery for thousands who are still without power from last weekend's ice storm in the South. About 150 million people were under cold weather advisories and extreme cold warnings in the eastern part of the United States, with wind chills near zero to single digits in the South, and the coldest air mass seen in South Florida since December of 1989. The Tampa-St. Petersburg area in Florida saw snow flurries and temperatures in the 20s in the Panhandle and 30s in South Florida on Sunday morning. That left cold, stunned iguanas lying prostrate and motionless on the ground. Iguanas in South Florida go dormant in the cold, and though they usually wake when temperatures warm, the reptiles can die after more than a day of extreme cold. The cold also left ice on strawberries and oranges in the state. Farmers in Florida sometimes spray water on fruit trees and berry plants to protect them from the cold. Meanwhile, the bomb cycle, known to meteorologists as an intense, rapidly strengthening weather system, contributed to nearly a foot of snow in and around Charlotte, North Carolina's largest city. The snowfall represented a top five snow event of all time there, Mullinax said. Flight cancellations exceeded 2,800 in the U.S. on Saturday, with another 1,500 on Sunday, according to FlightAware, a flight tracking and data company. About 1,800 of those Sunday cancellations were for flights departing or arriving Charlotte International Airport. The storm caused an hours-long mess on Interstate 85 northeast of the city after a crash left dozens of semi-tractors and other vehicles backed up into the evening, according to the State Highway Patrol. More than 1,000 traffic collisions and 2 road deaths were reported, North Carolina Governor Josh Stein said Sunday. It's an impressive cold shot for sure, and there are daily records that are being seen down in the South, Mullinax said. Snow blanketed the neighborhood of Lee Harrison, an insurance agent in a town outside of Greenville, North Carolina, and he planned to take his 3 daughters sledding in the backyard. "We're not going to drive anywhere," Harrison said. "It's thick enough that I would not feel comfortable driving with our family." Also in North Carolina, officials said an unoccupied beachfront house in the Buxton community on Cape Hatteras collapsed in heavy surf on Sunday. More than 110 deaths connected to the wintry weather and storms were reported around the U.S. since late January. In Tennessee and Mississippi, 2 states struck last weekend by a storm carrying snow and ice, more than 97,000 customers were still without electricity on Sunday, according to the outage tracking subsite poweroutage.us. Another 29,000 didn't have power on Sunday in Florida. Turning to national and world news, father-son detained by ICE returned to Minnesota. 5-year-old Liam Canojo Ramos and his father, who were detained by immigration officers in Minnesota and held at an ICE facility in Texas, were released following a judge's order and have returned to Minnesota, according to Texas Representative Joaquin Castro. The boy and his dad, Adrian Canejo Arias, who is originally from Ecuador, were detained in a Minneapolis suburb on January 20th. They were taken to a detention facility in Dilley, Texas. Catherine Schneider, a spokesperson for the Democratic congressman, confirmed the 2 arrived home. He said Castro picked them up from Dilley on Saturday night and escorted them home Sunday to Minnesota. In a statement, U.S. Department of Homeland Security Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin said, ICE did not target Liam Cojono Ramos, and that his mother refused to take him after his father's apprehension. His father told officers he wanted Liam to be with him, she said. The Trump administration is committed to restoring the rule of law and common sense to our immigration system and will continue to fight for the arrest, detention, and removal of aliens who have no right to be in this country, McLaughlin said. The government said the boy's father entered the U.S. illegally from Ecuador in December 2024. The family's lawyer said he has an asylum claim pending that allows him to stay in the United States. The Justice Department's online court docket showed no future hearings for Liam's father. The Digest. Subsidiary working with ICE will be sold. Paris. French company Capgemini announced Sunday that it will sell off its subsidiary that provides technology services to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement during global scrutiny of ICE agent tactics in the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. France's government pressured the company to be more transparent about its dealings with ICE, whose actions in Minnesota in recent weeks raised concern in France and many other countries. Capgemini said in a statement Sunday it will immediately start the process of selling off its subsidiary, Capgemini Government Solutions. It said the rules for working with U.S. federal government agencies did not allow the group to exercise appropriate control over certain aspects of the operation of this subsidiary to ensure alignment with the group's objectives. Iran leader warns U.S. against regional war. Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Iran's supreme leader warned Sunday that any attack by the United States would spark a regional war in the Mideast, further escalating tensions as President Donald Trump threatened to militarily strike the Islamic Republic over its crackdown on recent national protests. The comments from the 86-year-old Ayatollah Ali Khamenei are the most direct threat he's made so far, as the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln and associated American warships are in the Arabian Sea, sent by Trump there after Tehran's bloody crackdown on nationwide protests. It remains unclear whether Trump will use force. He's repeatedly said Iran wants to negotiate. Cuba. Mexico's President Claudia Sheinbaum announced Sunday she plans to send humanitarian aid to Cuba this week. Sheinbaum's comments came after U.S. President Donald Trump said he asked her to suspend oil shipments to the island. Georgia. A man being questioned by police Sunday at a suburban Atlanta hotel shot the two officers after inviting them into his room, killing one and seriously wounding the other, authorities said. The suspect was shot by one of the officers and was undergoing medical treatment, officers said. Costa Rica. Costa Rican voters went to the polls Sunday to choose between continuing the policies of outgoing conservative populist Rodrigo Chavez by electing his selected successor or giving a new chance to parties seeking to shed a self-serving establishment image. Prague. Tens of thousands of Czechs rallied Sunday in the capital and elsewhere to throw their weight behind President Petr Pavel in his dispute with the country's foreign minister. Some waved Czech, Ukrainian, and European Union flags, while others displayed posters and banners that read, "Long live Pavel." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of The Pantograph from Monday, February 2nd. Please stay tuned.